Welcome, everybody, to Around the ACL. Michelle Thompson here with Trey Ryder and Wally Kassler, coming off the kickoff battle part two. Lots to talk about there. We also had open number 13, and then we are getting ready for Cornhole Mania. Excited to see where our standings are now that this first national is completed, and of course, to see some more open champions. So, Trey, you're back, you're rested. How you feeling?
Yeah, I was slow yesterday, and then I took a nap, and I got a full 8 hours of sleep last night, and I feel like a brand new person. I feel like I can take on the world, because yesterday I did not feel that way. I got home late Sunday night, and then yesterday was like still trying to do some odds and ends and figure stuff out, and then do laundry, and then now I'm all reset. I'm back in the groove, ready to roll.
Are you? I have not unpacked. Have you unpacked? My luggage is still sitting in my room.
Oh, I've unpacked and done laundry.
Whoa. Like,
dang, like, overachiever.
Have to. Like it will, if I have like stuff, I can wait till the next morning. But if by like noon the next day, my clothes and and everything isn't unpacked and like laundry started, it drives me crazy, and I will literally think about it all day long. So I have to. My brain doesn't work like that.
It's out of sight, out of mind for the moment, but typically I do unpack and do laundry like the day I get home. But yesterday I laid on the couch and read a whole book. That was my day. I took a nap. I was like, this is the perfect same thing. Got 8 hours of sleep last night. I'm like, all right, we can do this again. We're good.
I absolutely hate connecting flights because I got back at like 4:30, where usually I'm getting back around 11. Because you talked about it before, Misha. I always fly out early because it's the nonstop flights out of St. Louis. And then later on the day, I got connecting flights. So same thing on the way back. There was no connecting flights available. Flew back through Atlanta and then had to like run to the gate. We had a 15-minute window. Wow. Hop on the plane, fly back here, land, take the suitcase out of the car, tell my mom, hey, I'm home. And then she said, we're at Jade's softball game. So I'm like, well, I guess I'll go watch my daughter play softball. So hop in the car, go watch her play softball. And then we had league at night, played cornhole, came home, crashed right away. Woke up this morning. I'm running around like a headless chicken. Kid's car had to go to the emissions test and get a new sticker. It broke down. So I'm taking care of all that stuff. And then I tried to get my sticker. And apparently I got to get an emissions test too. So after we record here, I'm going to go do that and then get my sticker. And then I need a haircut and basically pack the car right back up as I hit the road tomorrow. And I head out to the Northeast Conference Championships. But along the way, I'm going to make a pit stop. I guess it's not really a spoiler alert because it won't air until I get there. But I'm going to head out to Ohio and play in a blind draw with Jeremiah Ellis and all them. So it'd be kind of fun. I'm going to get
good
one day
of
fun. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds awful.
The good news is I don't have enough time to think about how awful it is. Because I'm just so nonstop. Like, I'm running off adrenaline right now. I actually just, my food right here is getting cold. I didn't have a chance to finish eating it. So, yeah, I'm just nonstop. Go, go, go.
I will crash and I will be dysfunctional and I can't do that. Yeah. Especially with Rome's birthdays on Thursday, his party's on Saturday. He wants to do a sleepover with three friends. And I can't even get him. He's like, what about these people? I'm like, that's not three. That's four. Like, he cannot narrow it to three. I'm like, I'm not having that many kids sleep over. It's craziness. This kid, I swear. Alrighty, but let's get into it. Open number 13 is where we will start. That was, of course, in West Wego, right outside of New Orleans, Louisiana. Going on record saying that I explored none of New Orleans the whole time I was there. I only went to Buffalo Wild Wings, and I'm bitter about it. Anyways, moving on, Gavin Cano takes singles, Fisher Hamilton and Landon Crabtree take doubles, Sarah Cassidy takes women's, Frank Modlin seniors, and Ryan Trader juniors. Trey, give me your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, we're in a way kind of talking about what happened last first, and so because of that, it doesn't necessarily set up, you know, it sets up Gavin Cano in a much more positive light, right? We can say that, hey, he was able to get across the finish line, and I think that was really, really big for him. So it's not his first singles win, right? He did get a pro shootout singles win last season, but I think everybody would agree that what the shootout was last year didn't feel as big as even saying winning an Open this year and obviously a national singles win. It didn't live up to the same level of hype. So having said that, for Gavin Cano, this is the biggest win of his career when it comes to singles. And I think what makes it even more impressive is that he was able to do it less than 24 hours after being so close to getting that big signature win the previous time, right? And I think what we've seen from a lot of great players is that a lot of great players know how to learn from losing. And even if when we talk about Jeremiah Ellis a little bit later, him getting that big signature win for the first time, for Gavin Cano, for him to get that signature victory is big for him, especially coming off of a loss. And it shows that he is someone that can reset and refocus, because I got to see him immediately after that broadcast when he lost. And it was emotional for him. It was a really tough time, and it was a tough loss for him. And for him to be able to bounce back was a really, really great thing for him. And I think it builds a lot of momentum for him. It was also really good for me to see Jacob Gore back near the very end, right at the end, putting on a big show, because I really think that Jacob Gore, I was not getting worried about, but I just wasn't seeing the same level of dominant performance that I had seen in previous events, right? And we talked about him being a dominant player. And so for him to bounce back and be right there at the end of a big singles event, I think that's really good news. On the doubles side of things, when I look at, the lineup of teams that were there, it's a really good win for Landon Crabtree, right? I mean, this is something that, he's got a great partner. Fisher Hamilton is obviously throwing really, really well, and someone that is at the top of the game, especially in doubles, and continues to show that he can win with anybody. But for Landon Crabtree, this has got to feel like a justification of a lot of hard work being put into this. I mean, Crabtree's been in the game now for 4 or 5 years when you include on the collegiate side of things. And I remember watching him on the collegiate side of things. He was just a novelty, right? He was just the guy that threw the bag weird. He wasn't the guy that you necessarily needed to worry about winning the entire thing. He was just a really cool story. And that's what the extent of what that was. And I think even he perceived that as, people don't take me seriously as a top level player. They just think I'm a really cool story to talk about. Hey, look at that guy that spins the bag weird, right? But I think for him to get over this hump and get a big win, to me, it reminds me a lot of Gavin Cano. So when you think about it, I think the Open singles was an opportunity for players to get over the hump that they've been trying to get over now for a good while. And so I think it was really, really a signature win for Crabtree in particular. And excited to see if he can continue that. Unfortunately for him, there's a lot of great rookies in front of him. So he's for a rookie of the year type of consideration, it's going to be tough for him to do that. But at the same time, that doesn't mean he can't put together a really stellar and a really solid performance for the rest of the season. It was also good to see Braden Wilson continue that. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about this, or we did talk a little bit about this previously, and maybe we'll touch on it again when we talk about the kickoff battle recap. But I think it was, Braden Wilson, this is almost insane for me to say out loud, and everybody else will maybe think I'm crazy, but to me, his performance this weekend and even going back to Palm Beach really surprised me and took me off guard and caught me off guard. And part of that is because if this had happened 6-7 months ago, what Braden Wilson did, I would have said, no, it makes perfect sense. But we just hadn't seen the consistency from Braden Wilson over the past 3 to 4 months to justify thinking he was going to be there right at the end, right at the finals. I mean, that's a long way for him to make it all the way consistently in these back-to-back tournaments. So then he makes it all the way, to the kickoff battle broadcast, puts on a great showing, which we'll talk about. And then even in singles of this Open, makes a really, really deep run as well. I mean, I was impressed to see him and all the consistent play he's been able to put together. So, you know, overall, I think I was impressed specifically by Braden Wilson and Jacob Gore. But, you know, the two that stole the show for me, Gavin Cano, Landon Crabtree, getting over the big hump, getting across the finish line, and getting their signature win.
Wally's been talking about Landon Crabtree for a minute here, right, Wally?
I have, but never this will. I always talked about him getting second place, so this is going to be new for me. So, yeah, I've been one of the best president of the Landon Crabtree Hater Club, but deep down, I'm rooting for the guy. We all know it. And we had a long drive back from Bryan, Texas, and he talked about it. You know, Trey hit it right on the head. He said, I'm tired of people only talking about me for spinning the bag backwards. He said, I feel like I'm doing well enough. You know, Anthony gave him a shout out as we were like listening back and driving back. So it happened at the right time. But I was like, you have been, you know, very, very consistent in doubles. And you've actually been having kind of a sneaky good singles season. We talked about the weird pairing with Fisher Hamilton, but I mean, they vibed very, very well. They fed off of each other. I believe there was one game on a live feed course where Landon Crabtree is one bag away from a perfect game. And it was just very impressive. There wasn't like Fisher Hamilton, who has, I believe, 9 titles now, most of them in doubles. It wasn't like he was getting carried by Fisher. They were working really, really well. So, you know, tip of the cap to Landon Crabtree there. I want to talk about Sarah Cassidy. We talk about who's that female that's going to step up. Sarah Cassidy, again, she's right there at the top. She's taking it down. She looks very, very impressive. She might be putting her name in the, you know, ring for that number one contender spot between, you know, Cheyenne Cameron and Sarah. So good to see her step up. Modlin stepped up, does what Modlin does in the seniors division. Ryan Trader does what he does in the juniors division. But yeah, Gavin Cano, man, absolutely proud of this kid for taking down singles. We've seen this before. I believe the shootout last season that we're talking about, he lost in doubles earlier in the day. Went off to the corner, had his head down, kind of had like a mental, you know, reset, and then went to the court, handled his business, took down that shootout. I saw the same thing. Actually, I couldn't even find him. After he lost in singles, he was gone. I was asking Kat where he went. She said, not a good time. So I said, Bella, when you see Gavin, tell him I'm looking for him. And then the very next day, brand new Gavin, just loose, having that Gavin smile, relaxed, throwing very well. And no headphones during the Open Singles Championship. And every point, he was, come on, this is the one. This is the one. Fired up. So he was kind of starting to hype himself up a little bit, very similar to what we saw out of Braden Wilson. So you're talking about Braden Wilson being very impressive. I'm right there with you, but I feel like he's more of an element player. Like if the crowd is in Braden Wilson's corner and he starts having big momentum shots, Braden Wilson is him. He is lights out, controlling the center, and then not afraid to take the risky shots. For me, that's what was impressive. He was right there, toe for toe, boxing it in the center of the ring, you know, like Gaethje and Holloway at the UFC fight with Devin Harbaugh, airmail after airmail after airmail. Those guys put on a show. So Devin Harbaugh, Braden Wilson, probably matchups of the night. But, yeah, ultimately, man, Gavin Cano stole the show from me this weekend.
He definitely needed that win. I will out myself that in Buy or Sell, I wrote, Gavin Cano has a finishing problem, and then delete, 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 delete.
Yeah. Yeah. As soon as we hit Sunday, it's like, well, that doesn't make any sense anymore.
I was actually thinking about that Saturday, or I think it was Saturday. Yeah. After the broadcast, I was like, I swear if that's on the front of schedule. No, but yeah.
And Wally, you mentioned titles list. So, I mean, if we look at titles and how the Open shaped out, yeah, Fisher Hamilton gets his 9th title. I mean, that's big. That puts him into 10th all time, which is crazy to even think about that he's done that many already. But, you know, 5 of those, half of them have come in Open doubles. I mean, he's just a guy that, you know, wins at the Open level in doubles. Landon Crabtree obviously getting his first, and then Gavin Cano, he jumps in and gets his 7th, which is good for 15th all time. So again, Gavin Cano also has got those 5 Open double titles, but now has the 2nd a singles title this time on the Open side of things. So that was, you know, that was a good one for him to get. And then maybe the only other ones I probably missed on singles that I probably wanted to mention was just, you know, obviously Ethan Walker wins another bracket. This is a kid that, if he can get off complaining off social media, could actually be a really good a really good player. So, you know, someone that can continually can hit a lot of different shots. And I think when he's able to, shape his shots and is confident in that, is one of the best players in the world. We've seen him continue time and time again to continue to finish at a high level. So he's doing really good. And then, hey, how about the, how about the amateur Jackson Remick, right? Jackson Remick, he makes a really deep run. It makes it, he's on the broadcast a couple days before when it comes to teams and then makes a deep run in open singles. So I think Remick will continue to be someone that people need to look out for, because he's going to be a tough kid to beat. And then, obviously Jaden Ellis and Evan Van Oss on the double side as well. Jaden Ellis comes very close to getting yet another open title. This time it would have been in doubles, playing with a player that I mean, to be honest with you guys, I wouldn't pick Van Oss to make it all the way to the finals. I mean, I just really wouldn't. And so for Jaden Ellis to get to have a really deep run and make that is impressive. And I honestly could say the same about Jeremy Schermerhorn and Jalen Jones. I mean, that's an interesting dynamic duo, that I would not have put together that made a deep run. So, an interesting pairings of doubles, and it was weird. Like, you look through the doubles results, and they're kind of like all over the place. I mean, even when you look at just who finished where, you have, your big name teams like Ryan Smith and Ryan Wienfeld. They were playing together. You had JBJ and Gavin Cano playing together, right? You almost expect them. Kyle Malone and Jeremiah Ellis, fifth in their bracket. Adam Hisner and Nico Morales, fifth. Tony Smith and Mark Richards, seventh in their bracket. So to an extent, we were kind of expecting a lot of these teams. It wasn't like this field was not a field that had some great teams in it. So I think that further justifies how good of a run it was for Landon Crabtree and Fisher Hamilton.
I think the weird thing is it was a doubles tournament that looked like a blind draw. There was very few actual teams that stuck together for this one.
Smith and Richards maybe celebrated the night before.
Probably. They probably showed up a little bit. I guess it was the day after. Yeah, so maybe it was a long day of celebration. I mean, it was a long night of celebration followed by a long day of rounders and then bracket play. Maybe a little slow.
I was sitting next to Betancourt on the broadcast, and he's like, "If Mark and Tony win this, it's gonna be a long night for me." Lucky Bags, I'm sure, put on a show. I mean, of course, with the Eric,
and Evan Van Oss. I don't know which way you say his name, but I've been kind of looking at his stats. He would post them sometimes, and then I started looking, and his stats are actually very impressive. So, I kind of low key thought he could go that far.
Yeah. So. I've traveled to Michigan quite a bit to do their state and their regionals and, conferences and stuff like that. Evan Van Oss is one of the best players in Michigan.
Yeah.
The way that he qualified as a pro, I think, is kind of what's throwing a lot of us off guard. But Evan Van Oss and Jaden Ellis were going to be pro partners heading into this season. So they've thrown together quite a bit. And I actually did pick them to go to the finals on the way that the bracket shook out, because I like what I've been seeing out of Evan lately. And, of course, I'm never going to count Jaden out. And then seeing them pair up together and getting that familiarity, I hate that word, back on the court. I really thought they were going to have a good showing, and they did. They backed it up.
It's a really good point. Sometimes, a player just needs someone that they have good chemistry with to play to their potential. We talked about great doubles players, and even though Evan may not be a top-tier singles player, he could play like a top-tier doubles player when paired with the right person. And if you're saying that they have the great team chemistry and they've played often together with Jaden Ellis, then, honestly, can't be that big of a surprise.
Yeah, for sure. All right, obviously, we had our kickoff battle number two, which was the conclusion of what we saw a couple weeks ago, and we were able to crown our champions, national singles, Jeremiah Ellis, national doubles, Richards and Smith. Shootout singles, Ian Cripps. Shootout doubles, Davis and Sorrells. Women's doubles, Odom Saprenant. Women's singles, Matthews. And, of course, our celebrity Super Hole, Daquan Jones and Blaine Rozier and Derek Carr and Trevor Kufis. Trey, take your pick.
Yeah, there's so many here, right? There's so many different things. I mean, I feel like I almost need to start with the one that the two I would say that most people would view as the – highest profile, right? That's going to be national singles and national doubles. So national singles, Jeremiah Ellis, he wins the first big pro event of the season when it comes to national singles, comes in second in shootout singles. But, you know, I enjoyed watching him. I thought he lived up to the hype. He still had his ups and downs. And what's so funny is I remember watching him in some of the Opens. And specifically, I almost go back to the match that he lost against Ryan Trader in the Open a couple Opens ago, the one that Devin Harbaugh ended up winning, right? And Jeremiah Ellis gets all the way to, I believe, the semifinals, the bracket finals, or something like that. And he looks like the best player on the day. And he's winning, he's going, and then boom, gives up a big round. And that person scores a big spot, and then they just run off with it. And it was almost like he took a punch that he didn't expect, and he didn't know how to rebound from that. Fast forward to the national singles, you know, final, both against Adam Hisner and against Gavin Cano, he had a lead that he saw either get dissolved, wiped away, or gave up a big spot. And in both of those games, I said to myself in my head, did he learn his lesson, right? And in both cases, he did. Ian Cripps flat out beat him. I don't really think that Jeremiah Ellis gave up the game to Ian Cripps. So I'll talk about Cripps in a second, and I don't view that in the same way. However, when we got to national singles, it felt like it was Ellis's to lose. And I thought for a second, he might turn around and actually find a way to lose this, because they had gotten big spots. He was up big against Adam Hisner, lets Hisner come all the way back, and then was able to get across the finish line and finish it. And so I think what I learned from Ellis this weekend is not only is he a talented player, but he has also learned now the ability to handle adversity within a game. And I think that is so critical to maintaining a high level of success throughout the year. A little bit later in the show, we're going to go through standings, and I'm going to talk about how significant of a weekend this was for Jeremiah Ellis, because he's going to be tough to catch, and we'll get into that a little bit later. So I want to talk about him. And then, hey, look, Mark Richards and Tony Smith, you know, I don't know what else I can really say other than they're probably one of the first teams ever, and when we talk about super team status, that once we hit the pro season, they pretty much completely live up to the hype, right? When I watch them in Palm Beach, even when I watch them on the broadcast, at no point did I say, wow, that's the most dominating team I've ever seen. And then what I did was I pulled the stats. Guys, they gave up like 7.5 points a game on average across all of Palm Beach and all over the broadcast. Their DPR combined was over 1. Yes, their PPR wasn't above a 10, but who gives a rip, right? I mean, statistically, these guys were disgusting. Like, some people can point to the bracket. Some people, I don't care. It's a pro bracket, and they just went through it like it was absolutely nothing. I mean, over a 1.0 DPR, less than 10 points allowed per game on average. And to me, it just goes to show you that Richards and Smith are as advertised, right? They may not win everything that they will this year, but I got to start thinking they're at least going to be in the conversation of Jamie Graham and Matt Guy when they first got together. I mean, remember, Jamie Graham and Matt Guy were absolute pure domination. They won 2 events. They made the finals of a third when we only had 4 nationals. I mean, that team was outrageously good, right? And it's not going to surprise me. And again, when we talk about standings, they have a good lead for that number one spot, meaning it's just going to be that much more difficult to take them off of that pedestal and have to defeat them early. And to be honest with you, I saw confidence from Tony Smith on the broadcast court. That's a problem. That is a problem for people, right? He didn't have it in shootout singles. I knew once he walked up to it, he saw the boards were fast, he was done. I knew it because he let an outside force. But when he got with Mark, the boards had slowed down just a tad. he was the best player on the boards. Mark Richards was just fine on the broadcast court. And if we're dealing with a just fine Mark Richards and a confident Tony Smith, that's not a recipe for any type of success that other people are going to have. So I think they're absolutely scary. Great to see Eric Davis. He played really well. Even though he lost his first game in singles in the shootout, I thought he played really well. Ian Cripps stole the shootout show. I thought he was absolutely incredible. He threw better than I thought he could. Now, I don't even know how else to put it. He just flat out was better than I ever thought he could be. Odom and Suprenant, Deb Odom, how about it, right? I mean, Deb Odom was the MVP. I went back and clipped it, and I was like, I could clip this and this and this and this from Deb. She was just locked in. And so I'm really happy for Deb and for Bella, but I think Deb wore that like mentor badge with honor, and I think that's what got him across the finish line, and what was really cool to see. And then of course, you know, wrapping it up with Katie Matthews. Look, I'll tell everybody this much. All the other ladies, that's a problem. You can't break serve in event number one, because this is one of those events where there's only four women's singles and four pro women's doubles for the tournament of champions. Once you win one, you're done. So Katie Matthews doesn't have to play in any more pro women's singles events for the year. She's into the finals. There's only three more women's singles spots to take, and Katie Matthews took one of them. Yikes. I mean, it talk about grit. The opposite of Mark and Tony, you look at her statistics and you go, how did she win? But I think that's even more of a testament to how mentally tough she was, because almost every game that she played was tight. She was able to overcome the mental aspects of it. She was able to fight it through, and she was able to outlast everybody that she played. She gave up a 9 spot.
I was just going to say, giving up a 9 and being able to come back and still win in the limited format. Use your birthday wish well.
Yeah. I mean, that's just a recipe for success for me. So, you know, shout out to all of our winners, but, you know, I thought it was really interesting and a fun weekend of Cornhole Finals to watch.
Definitely was. Wally, what do you think? All
right. So real quick, again, the magical stories, Katie Matthews on her birthday, winning that one. Very proud of her, the way that she came into that one. It caught me off guard, not on my radar. I feel almost awful for not putting her on the radar, but very, very impressive performance there for her to win it. And just stick with it. Like you said, the grit. Ian Cripps earned every single moment of that. It was magical right there in his home turf, the family in attendance. There was one moment where the pile around the hole was just absolutely messy. Ian Cripps hits a ridiculous roll shot, and Ellis right there in that moment was like, He's got it. And, you know, Ian did not look back after that at all, hitting the shots down the stretch to seal the deal. Nothing Ellis could do. Very impressed with him there. Richards and Smith, I was on the hater list. I was a keyboard warrior because I only chose to look at what I wanted to look at. I was not impressed with them. I saw them lay a stinker last weekend. It didn't look great. And then Fisher Hamilton foot fouled. And then it looked like Mark and Tony's confidence just shot through the roof. After that moment, I think they were just absolutely lights out. Fisher and Gavin, you know, they didn't really throw bad after that. Fisher,
no, they did.
Kudos to Fisher for getting back into it, because we've seen that tear him up in the past. But Mark and Tony flipped the switch, went in a whole nother level. So I apologize to Mark and Tony for not believing in that one. Jeremiah Ellis, you kind of talked about it. I want to touch base real quick about, you know, his word is believe. If you don't follow Jeremiah Ellis, you know, one, you're missing out. Two, his word is believe. All the positivity, not just for himself, but that he puts out there on other players and you as a viewer, as a fan, intermediate, all the way through the pro division. We talked to him a little bit. He was sitting at my table in between his matches. I said, probably the only word that's more powerful than believe is doubt. And I said, and it looked like whenever Hisner started coming back on, he started having some doubt. He's like, dude, no doubt about it. He's like, I was like, what do I got to do to stop this? He's like, he's got to miss eventually. And I said, yeah, but at that point, you're thinking about his game. You're not thinking about you making them in the hole anymore. He's like, hey, you're right. You're right. He's like, so I got out of that when he shined against Gavin. Gavin played very, very well. Again, hats off to Deb Odom and Suprenant. They looked very well. Tennyson, I don't think really lived up to her potential on the court there. She kind of, you know, left something out there. Davis and Sorrells continued. I went up to Eric. I said, I don't get it. I don't even understand it, but you're so good at shootouts, dude. I said, I'm sorry. I said, he's like the Tom Brady for me now, where I bet against Tom Brady so many times because he can't just continue to do it in a row, can he? And he does. And he still upsets me. But it great to see them succeed on there. They had fun. And then last thing, the Super Hole, probably the most fun I've had in a Super Hole. Having all the football players there, the trash talk, the TV timeouts, I was yelling down one woman like Josh or Juwan Johnson, like, he looks just like me. And he's like, we twins. Just the players that we got there, they're feeding into it. They were having some fun. And all the players that were involved as far as picking to play with the NFL players, they all brought it, and I enjoyed it.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I didn't even talk about Super Bowl, but I tend to agree, Wally. I mean, it was a blast, and I think – you know, the football theme, it'll be all football players this year for Super Bowl, which is really, really exciting. And it'll have that same theme throughout the year. It'll have two players from an NFL team, you know, at each of the different Super Bowl events going against two other, you know, football NFL teams. So was really excited. I kind of felt bad again, though, for Deion Dawkins. He brings yet another teammate just to have some fun, and then the teammate comes out of nowhere. Because remember, like, last year when he played Tim Settle, he was winning, and all of a sudden Tim Settle had that round where he hits three straight airmails. And you're like, what is going on? And then same thing happens here. Daquan Jones flips the bag over on Slick side and pushes two bags in. Like, what are we talking about here? I mean –
Well, gladly, he's got work to do the rest of the season, so he can't really focus on playing anymore. Anyway, he's got work to do. He's got to keep this up. that was fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, poor Deion. I felt so bad. All right, time for buy or sell. First one being Gavin Cano will win a national in either singles or doubles this season.
Yeah. So, man, this is a really, really hard one because we're talking about some of the best in the world, right? I'm actually going to go out there and buy, as long as you're letting me take national or shootout singles and doubles, so some type of pro event. If you'll let me take either one of those, Michelle, I'll buy it. So
I was not intending to include shootout, but
okay, then I'll sell it statistically. Okay. I mean Gavin Cano is going to get a pro title this year. That is what I'm certain of. Whether or not it comes in one format or another, you know, I'm just playing the odds game at that point, but I am confident in his ability to now. And because I view him kind of like Ellis, it took him longer. Like, what's still crazy about Ellis is that his timeline was so much shorter, but everybody goes through the same timeline, right? Mm-hmm. You break out, everybody's expectations of you rise. You don't meet those expectations. And then you get across the finish line. Every great player that we've ever had has had that timeline. It's just a matter of how long that timeline is. For us, I think Gavin Cano's is much longer, right? Whereas Jeremiah Ellis's has been just so quick to get there. So I'm still really confident in Gavin Cano getting a pro title this season, so I'll buy it.
Wally?
Definitely buying it, 100%. If you're giving me singles and doubles, I have Fisher Hamilton and Gavin Cano finishing as the number one doubles team in the world at the end of the season. In order to do that, they have to win some doubles titles. So I'm going to take that as an easy buy for me. But just I love the way his singles game has came along with his doubles game.
Ian Cripps will finish better than the Gore twins this season.
You know, points wise, it's going to be tough. I mean, when you win an event, it's going to be tough for him not to, is what I'm saying. Like, you win an event, 20 bonus points is a lot. Ian Cripps, number two player in the world right now. I mean, we're talking about he would have to have a not great finish to the season, and we'd have to see Jake or Jack Gore really have a signature performance getting away across the finish line. Because of the start, I mean, I still think Jake on average is a better player, but for now, I'm going to have to buy it. Like, it's just going to require a really big turnaround for Jake Gore to flip that script.
Wally?
I'm going to sell this one mainly because the Gores get to practice with each other. And I think both of their games are elevating at the right time right now, heading into the pro season. And they're just going to improve and make each other better and better. Jake Gore is close. Trey said he kind of fell off a little bit. We were talking about Jackson Gore being the better Gore. I think they're both going to feed off of each other and compete in that, you know, sibling rivalry, and it's going to be close, but I don't want to take anything away from Ian.
Trevor Kufis will use Super Bowl momentum to win a shootout.
I'm going to sell this one. You know, when we think about shootout, you could win a singles or a doubles, right? But unfortunately, you know, Jared's just not at that level. I just don't see Trevor and Jared being able to win. So then it just all goes on Trevor in singles. Maybe in a smaller field, like, he can be a top 40 player, can Kufis, but with the way shootouts are laid out this year, you really have to be, you know, the best player out of 200 plus.
Well, and if he played the way he did on Super Bowl, he would be.
True, that's true, but I'm just not sure I can see that sustained across an entire tournament, so I'm gonna sell.
Wally.
Yeah, I'm going to sell it as well. The environment for the Super Bowl, I think, carried him into his performance there, because he was loose, he was relaxed, he was having fun. And I think the chance he has, or whenever he has the chance to add a title, and in that type of environment, I think it might put a little bit more pressure on him and then lose some of that fun element that he needed. So, selling this one.
Katie Matthews will win another women's event this season.
Yeah, I'm going to sell it. And the reason I'm going to sell this is going to sound not like a compliment, but it is. But she capitalized on her one shot, right?
Well, it includes opens, though.
It includes opens. I totally agree there. But she capitalized on that one shot, right? To me, this is someone that is still very young in cornhole, very young, when we talk about her sustained success, right? So for me, this is someone that maybe she continues to get there and she becomes a dominant player day in and day out. But for me, this is someone that, guys, there's a reason she's the 212th ranked pro out there, right? But she won the event. She had her day and she capitalized on that specific day. And she was able to do that. So many players, they have that day and then they get to the finals and they tense up and they don't take advantage of that opportunity. Think of how many players we've talked about. Man, what a talent. What a deep run that they had. They just couldn't get across the finish line. She got across her finish line. That's worth celebrating. And it's okay to say she was, you know, outside of her realm of normally where she'd finish, but she took advantage of the moment. And so I think maybe next season we can talk about Katie Matthews being a multi-event winner. But for this year, hey, let's just celebrate the idea that she got her shot and she took advantage of it. And hey, maybe even come August, we got a lot of time between now and August. Maybe in August, she's a completely different player and she is that dominating face. So when we hit that tournament of champions and singles, hey, what do you know? She's got a chance to win it.
Wally.
Yeah, Katie's one of my favorite people in the league. Love that she got her moment here, but I'm going to go ahead and sell this one because of some of the people that were missing from this tournament. You know, we didn't see the big names. I don't remember seeing Lori or Miranda there, Cheyenne, Cameron. The field's going to get harder as we go down the stretch, especially whenever everybody else is chasing these points that she already has. So it's going to be a tougher field going forward. Absolutely thrilled for her, though. But, yeah, selling this one.
Richard Smith will win another national doubles.
I'll buy it. I mean, you're now taking the team that you say is, that we're saying statistically is the most dominant in the league. They already won one, and we're going to give them the number one seed for at least the next two events. Oh, I mean, geez. I mean, what? I mean, I don't know. I don't like those odds betting against him. Put me in the Wally Tom Brady category on that one.
Wally?
Yeah, I'll actually buy this one. I think they are going to win another title because of the seeding that they're going to get. A little bit of Eddie and KB factor going into this one. The difference is they're striking earlier than Eddie and KB did. I mean, we still got Justin Burton Jr., Logan Chamberlain, Sammy Soto and Jackson Gore. Hunter Thorne and Jake Gore throwing very, very well. There's some stronger doubles teams. But the path to get there is going to be easier for Mark and Tony. And the thing is like, I think the reason I've been hating on it is because I'm not seeing their A-plus game. I'm just seeing their regular A game. But I'm forgetting that their regular A game is 10 times better than most of the players out there. So I got to accept for reality for what it is. These guys are great.
All right, let's look at our standings so we can take these standings into Cornhole Mania. And next week we'll have our brackets to preview because these standings matter. We talked about it. You know, how you perform in kickoff battle is strongly going to dictate what happens in the rest of the season, even though you can technically drop an event. But this is your seeding going forward. So number one, Jeremiah Ellis. Two, Ian Cripps. Three, Alex Rawls. Tied with Eric Davis and Ethan Walker. Six, Ryan Trader. Seven, Braden Wilson and Sammy Soto. And nine, Gavin Cano. Lots of Texas on there, Trey. And then let's just chat about that, and then we'll go into doubles. So thoughts on the standings.
Yeah, thoughts on the standings. And as you'll see them posted, you know, Jeremiah Ellis has a 38-point lead in first to second place. And I know not everybody on that watches our show is going to understand what 38 points is. What you need to understand is 38 points is a lot of points. Okay. Realistically, that's the difference in first and probably 20th place overall in a tournament.
Winning the event is 20, right? And then second place is 18. So
winning an event, you get 20. So winning your bracket, you get 400 points. Okay. If you win the first game in the semifinal and lose in the finals, you get 410. So you get 10 bonus points. And then if you win the second game, you win the whole thing, you get 420. Okay. If you're second in your bracket, you're getting 396. Then you're getting 392 for third. You're getting 388 for fourth in your bracket. So you can start to see the scope of how far down from first place to fifth, sixth in a bracket on average someone is, that Jeremiah Ellis is going to have to finish for people to keep up with him. That is a huge, massive lead. Jeremiah Ellis all of a sudden becomes an odds-on favorite to be not only just Rookie of the Year, but Man of the Year at the end of the year, and possibly even MVP, depending on how he finishes and doubles the rest of the season with Ryan Hart. That's significant to me. So that was one of the things I wanted to point out from the single standings. The other thing I want to point out, man, Alex Rawls, he's just one of those guys. He sits in the top five every single year, right? Ian Cripps being at number two, to me, feels a little inflated right now because he won the shootout. He deserves it for now. I don't foresee Ian Cripps being there at the end of the season, but that's his job to prove us wrong there. But he's getting a lot of help from the bonus points at this current time. Eric Davis, Mish is through the roof here and that. But a lot of young kids. You got Ian Cripps, Ryan Trader, Braden Wilson, and Sammy Soto, four in the top 10 is crazy in singles.
Three rookies, four juniors.
Yeah, I was like, these kids and these Texas players and these. Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, how many Texas? So Texas wise, we have what Wilson, Soto, and Cano to round it all out of the back end. So yeah, three. I think the over under. What did we say was like four? So we're like right now we're touting the under, but we're close.
It's definitely close. Wally, thoughts on the standings for singles?
Yeah, it's interesting to see the names that are on there. You know, Harbaugh, Smith, Malone, Richards. So Cornhole Mania is going to be very important to see which one of these nine players stay in the top nine or which ones fall out if those guys that I mentioned, you know, have strong finishes. But yeah, Jeremiah is going to be hard to catch now that I kind of understand the point system a little bit better. You pretty much got to win the event to get your name thrown in the hat now. That's crazy.
Moving on to doubles, Tony Smith, Mark Richards at number one, Eric Davis, Matt Sorrells at two. Vincent Frisch, Austin Camera, three. Carson Getty, Hunter Thorson, four. Corey Gilbert, Dean Norton, five. Derek Holland, Alex Rawls at six. And Jackson Gore, Sammy Soto at six. Ryan Smith, Ryan Wienfeld at eight. And Alex Hicks and Ryan Trader at nine. Trey, what you got?
Hey, well, first of all, I look at this list. There's realistically, I'd probably say three teams on this list that you'd say don't belong. And those people should get, you know, a round of applause. Those people should get some kudos because we didn't pick them. I didn't pick Vincent Frisch and Austin Cameron to be a top 10 team. Never mind a top three team, right? That's a huge run by them. I thought they'd be good. I even said Austin Cameron I thought would be really good. I didn't expect them to be that good, right? That's a shout out to them there. Carson Getty and Hunter Thorson. I mean, come on, we're out of left field here. I mean, maybe Wally will say he was, you know, excited to see them, but I sure as hell wasn't. I mean, I just didn't think that they had it in them to get across, you know, as far as they did. So that's a big win for them, and they should, you know, they should be proud of that. But each one of those two teams had a rookie element that we just weren't sure. Like, we didn't right. know how good Thorson was going to be. We didn't know how good Cameron was going to be. But Corey Gilbert and Dean Norton, this is just from Mars. Like, these are two guys that if you look at how they finished last year, both in singles and doubles, you go, yeah, great top 30 team. You know, really solid top 30 team. We're talking about Corey Gilbert and Dean Norton being a top 5 team. I want everybody to process that in your heads.
This is like Corey the pro Gilbert. Qualifiers, right? When Corey Gilbert went 8-0, you're like, what?
Here's my hope. Because they were so fun to watch, I'm begging that it wasn't a fluke, right? Because I think their energy makes it that much more fun when we go to some of these pro events. So I hope they keep that up. Davis and Sorrells, man, have yourselves a weekend. Again, I think they can have a really strong finish, but just like Ellis, you know, Smith and Richards don't have as big of a gap between 1 and 2 because Davis and Sorrells are pretty close to them. But the gap after that is almost a 30-point lead to third. So I'm not saying necessarily that Smith and Richards can't fall off, but the difference is this list feels weirder when it comes to some of these top teams not being there. So like, if another top team like that is not in the top 10 is going to catch him, and they're just a long way to go.
Wally, you have 1 minute. Trey took all your time.
All right, I'll go ahead and touch base at the bottom, work my way up. The Ryans at the bottom there, Smith, Wiedenfeld, Trader, along with Alex. I think they're going to climb up the rankings as the season goes on. Happy to see Alex Hicks and Ryan Trader succeed. Kind of a little bit of a stinker again from Alex on TV, so we got to get that part fixed. But I love the chemistry right now with Ryan Smith and Ryan Wiedenfeld. So I firmly believe they can climb all the way up in there. But again, name's not there. Harbaugh Malone. You know, we got some of these super teams. Where are they going to be after Cornhole Mania?
All right, time for hot takes. You got one, Trey?
Yeah.
Cornhole Mania?
I'm not going Cornhole Mania. This is a weird hot take because okay. I'm not like predicting anything. But like right now, you got to say Trey Ryder gives an MVP to someone right now.
Okay.
I'm going to give my MVP right now to Eric Davis.
Wow.
I think he earned it.
I had him as, I can't remember if I put him at comeback or breakout because I confuse those sometimes. But yeah, that's okay.
Not predictive. We're not getting there. But like, that's enough of a hot take for me. Everybody's going to be like, it should be Jeremiah Ellis. No. Ellis hasn't done anything in doubles. You don't get to take the MVP that counts both. He can win man of the year. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But Eric Davis, congratulations. You're 25% through the season and you get my 25% MVP award. It means nothing, but you've earned it.
It means nothing. All right, Wally, are you going Cornhole Mania?
This is the part of the show where you tap me on the shoulder and say, good job, as your favorite son is taking all the
good
time.
Good job.
I'll go Cornhole Mania. I'll go in doubles. I am going to take Ryan Smith and Ryan Wiedenfeld to take down Cornhole Mania doubles.
Wow.
Good okay. One. I honestly, I don't know if it's a hot take. Maybe it's a little bit. I think Smith and Richards can do it again, back to back. I really do. I mean, I feel like Mark was off at the beginning. They still won. So if he locks in now, I mean, I think they're unstoppable. That's all we got time for. We'll see you guys next week to continue talking about Cornhole Mania and look at brackets. Thank you so much for joining us.